Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. Today, I am speaking to Thomas Winterton. He is the superintendent of the infamous Skinwalker Ranch in Utah and one of the stars of the hit show, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, on the History Channel. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast, and Welp magazine named it one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year. It's high ranking on Apple Podcasts. Just got some news today from my BBSR radio station, and I have learned that the show is literally now since the end, so just in a week, is now syndicated on 102.7 New York, and it's getting great numbers. So if you folks want to listen on the radio in New York, 102.7 is there for you. And if you love the podcast or radio and you'd like to see myself or my guests animated and connecting, I urge you to do so. You can do it on Spotify where they have video, but you can also do it on YouTube, my channel, which is youtube.com/Debbie Dashinger. Got lots of great stuff for you. And first, I just want to thank the sponsors of the show. You really help us along, and you've believed in us for a very long time. So thanks to Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. You can become a facilitator, or you can take one of their classes. Go to Dr. Dane here, HEER.com, or AccessConsciousness.com. A lot of people today want to know what their galactic ancestry is. Where am I from? What planet? What universe? Where am I headed? Why my traits? Why this lifetime? And if you're interested in knowing your star seed lineage, I have a free gift for you. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. It's got over 19 different starseed types that are broken down. It's very captivating and detailed, so don't miss the chance to connect with your star lineage. It's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. 2 events coming up. The largest channel panel. It's an event in Sedona, January 3rd through the 5th. It is the way to start the new year. This is going to be a weekend of workshops. Renowned channelers like Daryl Anka, Wendy Kennedy, Jamie Price, Rob Gauthier, Lisa Royal Holt, and many, many others. I am presenting and doing a workshop. So start your new year off with us in a healing and whole way. You can secure your spot at debbiedashinger.com/Sedona. And by the way, everything's also in the show notes, so you can go there to click. And finally, my guest is appearing at this event. I'm at this event every year, and I urge you to get your tickets. Don't miss out. I'm hearing more and more this year, people flying in from all sorts of amazing places. And I am so excited. Best event of the year. Yep, it's the LA Conscious Life Expo, February 7th through the 10th. The link for tickets is in the show notes, and you can go to debbiedashinger.com/CLE for Conscious Life Expo, debbiedashinger.com/CLE. And you'll be hearing my guest there, as well as the folks that he works with. I think that's a not-to-be-missed experience. So let's get to the guest. Thomas Winterton, superintendent of Skinwalker Ranch, overseeing the maintenance of the property, its facilities, its equipment, as well as overseeing ranching activities and assisting in investigations. He's a native of Utah, a successful entrepreneur, and a business leader in the area. Thomas's unique background and experience give him an in-depth insight into UFO phenomenon at Skinwalker Ranch and the surrounding area, especially his own incredible experiences that have taken place there. And we're going to take a deep dive together with you into the unknown world of UFOs, UAPs, portals, aliens, all things paranormal. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to skinwalker-ranch.com. And I welcome Thomas Winterton to Dare to Dream. It's so great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to visit with you today.
I got to say right at the top, Thomas, I think you're the bravest man I know. I don't know that I could do what you do. And I was watching some of the shows, the Skinwalker Ranch shows on History Channel, and I started having really dark dreams. And I'm a sensitive, so I don't know what I was perceiving that made its way into my subconscious, but you are really brave. How did they find you? How did you sign up for a job like this?
Well, first of all, thank you for your kind words. And I didn't know what I was signing up for. I probably would have given it a much more thoughtful review before saying yes. But I actually, Brandon Fugel, the current owner of the ranch, purchased it back in April of 2016. And when he did, it was his wishes to remain anonymous. He didn't want anyone to know that he was the owner. He's a very successful real estate broker, and he was worried that, you know, the stigma of buying this paranormal ranch could affect his day job. And so his wishes to remain anonymous meant that he reached out to one of his close confidants, Jim Morse, and asked Jim if he would come out to the basin and really kind of start to, you know, figure out what exactly Skinwalker Ranch was and try to establish some steps for moving forward. And so Jim traveled out that first week that Brandon bought it. Jim traveled out, and it just so happens that it was on a Sunday. I happened to be at church, and at the time my wife and I owned a couple small luxury boutique hotels, one of them being here in Roosevelt. And I was at church, and I had a guest call me and tell me that their TV wasn't working. And so apparently there was some sporting event that's taking place that they were missing. So I immediately left church, went down there, helped them fix, you know, put their TV on the right input. And I was leaving the room and just walking across the parking lot back to my car when this black SUV with, dark tinted windows came pulling slowly into the parking lot, and it rolled up and stopped right in front of me. And the window came down, and there was a gentleman in there that asks, you know, "Are you a hotel?" And I said, "Yeah, we are." And he asked if he could see a room. And so I showed him, and he said, "Oh, yes, we're definitely staying here." And so I checked him in and I left. And the next day, I happened to be down at my office when this gentleman was checking out of his room. And he came across and found me in my office and started visiting and thanking me for a nice room, and introduced himself as, Jim Morse, and told me a little bit of his background of being a successful real estate developer, and told me he was out here on an errand on behalf of a good friend who was a very successful real estate broker who had purchased Skinwalker Ranch. Now, growing up, I grew up here in the Uinta Basin. I'd heard many stories about Skinwalker Ranch. Matter of fact, when I was in high school in the late 90s, that was the height of the activity that was going on when Robert Bigelow purchased it from the Shermans. And so we'd heard lots of rumors around town. I've never been into the paranormal. I've always just been kind of a career focused, you know, serial entrepreneur business, and never watched Star Trek or Star Wars or any of that. I just really, that wasn't in the scope of what interested me. And Jim, when he found out I was a licensed general contractor here in the state and that I'd actually built the hotel that he just stayed in, he said, "Oh, well, will you come out and do a property inspection for me out at Skinwalker?" And for me, the lure was really to develop, a good relationship with Jim Morse and ultimately with the owner of the ranch, because my interests were in business. And I saw this as an opportunity to gain two really good business relationships.
Wow.
And so, you know, I happily accepted for that. And I won't lie, you know, the opportunity to go on this strange place that had been locked down for, you know, 2 decades, and you know, the lure of being able to go someplace that other people can't was appealing. And so I agreed to go out and do a property inspection. And the following week, when Jim came out from Salt Lake to take me out there, we rolled in and I did the inspection and found a lot of things that needed immediate attention. And so I got to work and helped them correct some of these. Some of them were very serious issues. I helped get them fixed. And Brandon just, you know, reached out and said, "Hey, will you just manage this for me? You live out there, you're close, and I trust you." And so that's how I ended up as the manager of Skinwalker Ranch, was through that. And in no way did I go on there, you know, looking to be involved in investigation or the paranormal or any of that.
Yeah, and I thought my path in life was pretty amazing. That is exceptional. One of the things it says in your bio is Thomas's unique background and experience give him an in-depth insight into the UFO phenomenon. What does that mean? What is your unique background and experience?
Well, I think, you know, in that really, I have been heavily involved in the area, whether it's politically. You know, I was president of the Roosevelt Rotary Club here. I've been chairman of our local political party here in the county. I've been the chairman of a nonprofit organization for years. I've been heavily involved in the community, and as such, you know, I have a lot of great contacts and resources in the area. As far as the UFOs, you know, interestingly enough, I only ever had one UFO experience leading into my time at the ranch, and it really wasn't that traumatic of an experience. I happened to be young, probably, I don't know, 10, 11 years old at the time, and I had looked out my bedroom window one night. It was late, and I happened to see a big, beautiful orange moon out there in the horizon. We had an oil refinery here in Roosevelt at the time. And the moon was just out there. It was a half moon, and it was on its back rather than, you know, on its side, which I found unusual because usually I've seen, you know, it's a half moon, it's kind of vertical, not horizontal. But I didn't give much thought about it. And then right before I went to bed, I looked out the window, and it was gone. It was out towards the west, and I just assumed it had dropped below the horizon. The next morning, when I got up and mentioned, I had mentioned to my mom, I said, "Man, you should have seen the moon last night. It was just gorgeous." My mom said, "I don't think there was a moon last night." I said, "Oh yeah, I saw it." And when we looked at the calendar, sure enough, there was no moon that night. So I don't know what it was that was out there in the horizon. Definitely wasn't the moon. That was my UFO experience. But because of my connection with the local area, you know, as soon as I became affiliated with the ranch and people found out, people started coming up to me as the local guy by the hundreds and sharing their experiences that have happened here in the ranch, you know, around the ranch and here in the Uinta Basin. And so my position here has uniquely positioned me in such a way that has allowed me to really tap into the locals' UFOs experiences and I'm not exaggerating. I mean, at this point, 9 years in, I bet it exceeds several hundred, you know, people in the area that have had some pretty remarkable experiences. And these are very credible, grounded people, leaders in the community, ecclesiastical leaders. And these are people that they usually start by telling me, "If you tell anyone I said this, I'll call you a liar." You know,
Wow.
they're not sharing it for any other purpose other than just they're trying to make sense of what they saw. And in some ways, they're looking to me to give an explanation or at least validation, you know.
Beautiful. Wow. Powerful stuff. Skinwalker Ranch, what would you say the mission is, Thomas? What do they typify, why they do what they do?
Well, I mean, I think we'd have to look to the owner, Brandon Fugel, who really is, you know, he purchased the ranch, he's had an interest in this area of study for a long time, has in the past invested money into what some would label as fringe science, you know, and has always had an interest in what else might be out there. And so Obviously, with him being at the helm and leading this investigation, we look to him as to the direction and really the objectives of the investigation. It first started out, I went on as a complete skeptic, and as did most of the other team members, and even Brandon himself. The very first time Jim Morse took me out to Salt Lake to meet him, and I met him there in the office, I remember Brandon sharing with me his reasons for purchasing the ranch. And so the first question that was posed to all of us is there something really happening at Skinwalker Ranch? We'd all heard the stories, but when Robert Bigelow sold it to Brandon, he sold it as is. He did not hand over any data or any material that could substantiate any of the claims that had been made, any of the stories. And so we basically were starting with a blank slate. So question number one, objective number one, was to observe and see, is there truly something strange or unexplainable happening at Skinwalker Ranch? And that was our objective for some time. And it didn't take very long. I mean, I think by the end of the first year of his ownership, most of us had gone from skeptics to experiencers, or at least witnessing strange phenomena. Now, some of the people like me that are hard-headed and stubborn, and I'm too analytical in my mind sometimes. Some of us were still trying to explain away these experiences and assign them to a prosaic or mundane explanation. But nonetheless, we were still witnessing things that were making us have to really stretch and say, well, it's probably this or it's probably that. But it didn't take too long for that question of, is something happening there? And then the objector or the next question was, well, okay, there's something happening. Now what? What do we do now? And that's really where the course of discussion started amongst us as team with Brandon. Okay, so we're observing some pretty remarkable things. What do we do with it? Do we keep it confidential, like Mr. Bigelow did, and just continue to observe and try to collect data? Do we share our findings publicly? And if we do, what's the right forum? Eric has had conversations with various different academia figures, or individuals, various science journals, and they view this topic as really fringe, and they don't want to engage in it. They don't take it seriously. And they definitely didn't want to be associated with us in any way, shape, or form. And so the normal, typical avenues that you would normally see the science community take, doing papers and publishing them for peer review, and that we were soundly rejected in that. And so really their discussion was, well, okay. And Brandon felt like a collaborative approach was the best way to embark on this investigation, because the more eyeballs you can get on a problem set, the more likely you are to come to a conclusion or find an answer quicker. And he didn't see enough reasons to keep it confidential. So, at that point, that's kind of when the show came in. But they came after us. We didn't go after them, and it just happened to be, a matter of the right timing. And so, anyways.
Wow. I question for you, and you mentioned Mr. Bigelow. So I saw, I believe it's in one of the shows where it is mentioned the reason why Mr. Bigelow sold, and that he had been sleeping in his bed and he was awakened by a presence, and there was a shaman standing over him that told him, you need to get off this land. Is that correct? And if so, does anyone know who that shaman is? And was that a kindness he was saying, or was that a warning he was saying?
That's a great question. Yes, I've heard that story before. I've had the privilege to meet with many of the Bigelow team. I've met Mr. Bigelow himself personally, and we've posed some of these questions to them, and I can't say that I got a straight answer as far as confirmation or denial, one way or the other. I've heard multiple reasons from individuals within their team as to why he sold. I will just tell you that, I did personally witness invitation extended to him to be flown out to the ranch and to visit again, after Brandon had purchased it, to which his response was, "I will never step foot on that ranch again. Don't ask me again." So, I did witness that firsthand. As far as any of the other reasons as to why he did or didn't, I would say that, I'm going to just have to fall back to the several varying accounts that I've heard from individuals within his circle, and I'm not sure, exactly which one or if all of them or none of them are true.
Okay, well, either way, very spooky out there, very strange. So, for folks who maybe don't know, I feel like many people are aware of this phenom we're talking about. But let me give you a little backstory. So, for over two centuries, the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah has been associated with strange and disturbing occurrences, and it actually defies physical reality. And so, Thomas is part of a team of experts who are dedicated to solving the mysteries that surround the ranch. What, Thomas, can you say about portals? Now, I always talk about portals with people in regards to interstellar travel, being visited by beings from other dimensions, extra dimensions, ultra dimensions, parallel realities. But it appears that in this reality on this earth in Utah at the ranch, there are portals. What do you know about them?
So the quick answer is not much. What we do know is, the facts at hand is that we've witnessed many different anomalies for which we do not have a quick, easy answer to address how that could be occurring. These are events that in some cases are they're operating outside the law of physics as we understand it. Meaning, obviously, we don't have a complete understanding of the law of physics. And so what we do know is as we try to go down the checklist and we try to find a box that we can put that we're witnessing these events, we're collecting the data, and we're trying to say, okay, could it be this? And we start going down the checklist. Nope, it can't be that. And as we go through the known explanations, we get through all of those, and we can't assign it to any of those. Is it a portal? Well, we can't say for sure. We do not have definitive data that says yes, that's a portal. But here's what I do know. Is that there are many instances where the data we've collected as we try to find that box that it fits in to compartmentalize it, it's when you line it up against the theories that have been presented by the likes of Einstein and some of these smart theorists or physicists out there that have hypothesized about what a portal, what would happen if a portal was present, what would the physics look like in that. As we witness some of the data that we're getting, it does match in some cases. And in some cases, it actually matches better than if we're trying to shove it into one of the known boxes. So, is there portals? We cannot say for sure one way or the other. What we can say is that in some cases, the data does line up. And nobody's, to my knowledge, nobody's been able to measure a portal or witness a portal as far as being able to gather hard data on it. And so if we did see that, what would that look like on the instruments? When would we know exactly that indeed that's what we're seeing?
Right, how
And
to measure it.
hopefully we can come closer to getting it.
Have you ever brought a medium out to the ranch? Somebody who's very accomplished, maybe does a lot of police cold case work to check out the phenomenon and give you feedback on what's happening.
So yes, as part of the investigation, and this is what I love about our scientists is that they have been open-minded to many different medias, for lack of a better word. They've been open to all possibilities. And as you can, anyone that's following our investigation on television can see, we have looked at some of the cultural things related to the Native American culture and the lore of the curse. We've brought out a rabbi who claimed that, the Jewish culture has tonal technologies that can open portals. And he came out and did a ceremony where we did witness some pretty remarkable anomalous behavior with the thermal cameras, and we were able to repeat it. And so there was, that sense. So in your question to the mediums, yes, we have also had an open mind to some of these other areas, and we have had some very accomplished mediums on, and their results have been intriguing. Interestingly enough, I don't know that I can't speak a lot to it because it hasn't aired. And I don't know, then ultimately at the end of the day, we don't know if it will or not. And so, but it we have indeed investigated those avenues.
Cool, very cool. Okay, well, I'll just keep watching. So here you are, you've witnessed numerous inexplicable events. Can you share with us a particularly compelling incident that occurred off camera that hasn't been featured on the TV show, but significantly impacted your experience at Skinwalker Ranch? What stands out for you?
Yeah, so I will share one that actually occurred in conjunction with with an exercise that did show on television. So any of the listeners out there that are familiar with our series, if you remember back, I believe it was in season three of our show, we had an experiment where we had some astronomers come out with their telescopes. And we had a telescope experiment out on the helipad. And we've long been picking up strange energies that are coming. We've triangulated them to an area that's about 5,000 feet above the triangle there in the ranch. And we have tried many different ways to try and collect data on this. Now, energies don't just come out of nowhere. You have a broadcast tower, you have something that is broadcasting the signal. The energy has to be coming from somewhere. And as we look up at this place, we see no visible signs of any explanation as to what could be causing this. And we've tried investigating it with weather balloons, with airplanes, helicopters. I'm trying to think of all the other methods. And so we've been thwarted every single time there's been something that's occurred that's kept us from collecting the data that we really wanted to get. So we decided, you know what? Let's bring telescopes out. And one of the This is a very low-tech way, not a lot of ways that this can go wrong. It's safe. And what we'll do is we'll train the telescope on the stars. And as the stars track across the sky from east to west, as they travel through that anomalous area that we've identified, we'll see if there's any distortion of light. And the best way to describe this is if you held up a clear glass of water and look at it and had somebody walk behind it, you'll see that as they walk behind the glass of water, the light bends around the glass and distorts their shape, right? That is the bending of the light. And so our idea was is if there was truly something up in that space, it could be causing atmospheric conditions and maybe the light would bend. So as the star went behind that object, maybe like the glass of water, the light of the star would bend around and we'd see it with the telescope. So we start tracking with these very, very sophisticated telescopes, and they have a hard burn data drive where you can pick a star and then the telescope will lock on it and it will track it as it goes across the sky. And we had a list of stars that would be going through that exact area that we were interested in. And as the telescope started to track, the star would disappear off the menu and the telescope would stop tracking. And this happened all night long, and it was only the stars that we were interested in that were being removed from this menu. Now, mind you, this telescope doesn't connect to the internet. There's no way to get in and hack it. It is a hard-burned directory. And so this was a really strange night. We saw UAPs. The telescopes would never function. And when they got to that one area, they worked fine everywhere else, but not when we were pointing them at that one area of the sky. We collected a lot of data that night, and we caught when we wrapped for the night. As we were cleaning up as we were cleaning up the set, I guess, all the tools, the telescopes, everything, taking them down, we decided real quick we would check for a 1.6 signal. Now, all of this is not seen on camera because the cameras were done. We had
What
wrapped.
is what does
And
1.6 signal mean?
so we've been a during the course of our investigation, we've noticed a correlation of a 1.6 megahertz signal that is directly correlated to when we say, okay, let's start the experiment. We'll have the 1.6 where we're analyzing it on the spectrum analyzers, and the noise floor is just there's nothing in there. And the second that we say, let's go, all of a sudden a 1.6 peak will appear. A very strong, definite signal appears at that 1.6. It'll vary just a little bit, 1.599 or 1.6, one. It varies just a little bit, but it's in that area. And then when we finish our experiment, we're done, the peak goes away. Now, there's a lot of things that transmit in that 1.6 range. Some of the satellite signals, the US government has that. It's not that we're seeing signals that's unusual. It's the direct correlation of we start an experiment and we see a new signal pop up. We end the experiment, the signal goes away, suggesting that it's correlated with what we're doing. And we don't know where we've tried to isolate where it's coming from. Sometimes when we're using these highly accurate directional antennas that tell us where the signal's coming from, sometimes it says it's coming from the mesa. Sometimes it's shown that it's coming from the drilling rig. It's in different areas, and sometimes it's moving around pretty erratic. So the behavior of the signal is really what's caught our attention. And so as we're doing these experiments, sometimes we'll check in to see, are we seeing that 1.6? What's it doing? We try to keep a close eye and record that while we're doing our experiments. And this night was no different. As we were concluding the experiment, there had been so much going on that night that our attention had been drawn so many places. And Travis was like, I want to see if what that signal's doing. We look, and sure enough, there it is. We find the signal. And we have two different types of antennas. One is omnidirectional, which means it'll pick the signal up from any direction. And then we have directional antennas, which will only pick it up if the antenna is pointing the direction that the signal's coming from. Well, we saw the signal on the omnidirectional. And so then I went over to the directional and started to see if we could figure out where it's coming from. And Travis, there's a little button there that you can click. And like if you were tuned into the, let's say, an FM frequency, 98.5, that happens to be a radio station here in the area. You can click this little button, this modulation button, and if there's data there that can be deciphered, it will play it. But normally, when you click that, all you hear is what's like static. There's no discernible information in the signal. Well, Travis happened to click on this as I'm over there, and we hear ourselves being broadcast over the signal. It's our voices. And this had happened one time before in a previous experiment, but we hadn't had time to really vet it out because we were in the moment. And so here we are done for the night, and it gave us a wonderful opportunity to further dive in and try to figure out what's going on. Why am I hearing my voice, Travis hearing his voice being broadcast over this 1.6? We're not broadcasting anything at 1.6. So we determined maybe it's, all of us have microphones on. We have our microphone packs, which are sending signals over to our audio guy, who's taking all the signals in from us plus the cameras. So the cameras have microphones, we have microphones. And so we had our production crew turn all their equipment off. We turned our microphones off. They turned the audio bag off. The cameras turned their stuff off. So now all of the things that could possibly be broadcasting are now turned off. and we listen, and we're still broadcasting over this 1.6. Sound like we're just on a microphone broadcasting over the computer speakers. So we take turns walking to the far side of the helipad, probably about 75, 80 feet away, and we're just talking normal voice, and it's broadcasting over the computer still. So now we're really baffled and we're thinking, what the heck could be doing this? So we come back over and it got even stranger because we grabbed our executive producer and we put him between Travis and I. I talked and it broadcast over the speakers. Travis talks and it broadcasts over the speakers. Our executive producer talks and it doesn't. So we don't, I don't know of a technology that can zero in that specific, right? We had all our equipment turned off. There was nothing that we had that could account for this. So something was zeroed in on us and rebroadcasting it to who knows where. We have no idea where it was being broadcast to. But I have to say that was one of the most disturbing things I've experienced on the ranch because I went home that night. We all did. We all went to bed that night wondering, do I ever have real privacy? Because at this point, we had heard ourselves being broadcast indoors and outdoors, meaning that just being inside wasn't enough to deter the signal. And I went to bed feeling extremely violated and thinking, do I ever truly have privacy? And who's listening in on it? And how are they doing it? We don't know. We're not aware of a technology that could zoom in and literally pick up me and pick up Travis, but not get the guy that's standing directly between us 2 feet away. That's just, I don't know how you do that. Neither did the scientists. And so to this day, that still bothers me. And there are moments where I'm by myself where I literally have the thought, like, I wonder if I really am by myself. Is somebody listening to me right now?
I'll bet. And so, folks who are listening and watching, I just want to mention that this triangle that Thomas is talking about, it is on the mesa and it's bordering the north side of the ranch. And there's a lot of phenomenon that takes place there. What about cryptids? So I'm really curious in this moment about stories. Have you had one particular experience that was just mind-blowing around a cryptid?
There are stories of individuals that have been out there. One of Mr. Bigelow's team reported seeing a portal open up through, I believe they were using night vision. And in the night vision, not with the naked eye, but in night vision, they saw a portal open up and a bipedal creature came out of it and then walked away out behind Homestead 2. So we've got some stories like that. Personally, myself, I mean, I have experiences of seeing some what appeared to be dogs. And luckily with this one, I always love it when things happen with other people around because it's nice to have some validation, know that you're not like losing your mind or imagining things. My wife and I were on the ranch and we were down by the creek and we looked up on the ridge and there was a bunch of dogs up there and all different shapes, sizes, breeds, and they were just up on the ridge and it had been raining for several days, so the ground was extremely soft and muddy. And because of my concern, some of these dogs pack up and then they start harassing the livestock or even us as humans. I've had them before come after me. And so my concern was if we have that many dogs on the property, I wanted to scare them off immediately. And so ran to the top of the ridge. And when we got up there, not only could we not find a single dog, but there was not one footprint in the mud where we had seen them at. There was not one track, not one footprint, which leads me to believe that, they were not physical in nature. But I have, as far as cryptids and that, my experiences have been more towards that type of an experience of seeing animals that appear to be there, but are leaving no physical traces that they were actually there.
And I know you've had a lot of UAP experience. What was the most outstanding? And also, has there ever been contact when a craft has been spotted?
Great questions. I have lost track of the number of UAPs. Now it's important to note, we see hundreds of UAPs, and then the due diligence starts. Was it a satellite? Was it an aircraft? Was it a drone? And was it the space station? There's a lot of work that has to go into. Was it a meteor? We have to go in and start really doing process of elimination. And out of, those hundreds, some of them are discovered to be, oh, that was the space station flying over, or oh, that was flight 1078 into Salt Lake. So not every UAP that we see ends up truly being a UAP. We are able to identify a large majority of them, but then there are those that even to this day we cannot we do not have a good explanation for. And some of them, I think the most remarkable one I saw was just simply because it appeared to be the very closest to us. And it happened to be that same night as the telescope experiment. And it came across the sky and it appeared to just be a couple hundred feet above the ground. It was just right down there above the field. And it was so bright and so, it just, it was moving slow across the sky. No aviation lights. We're in a main aviation corridor on the main approach into Salt Lake International Airport. We can see aviation lights at 35,000 feet, clear as day. So we're very confident when we're seeing a plane, when we're seeing a helicopter. Now, if this was a drone, this would have been, first of all, it would have been a very large drone. And the other thing was there was no noise to it. It
No
was silent
propulsion.
as far as we could tell. No visible propulsion, some of your typical telltale signs that have been seen in UFOs. And to your question of contact, that one is intriguing to us because we don't know. If they were communicating with us, what form would it take? Is it coming in signals? Is it coming in, flashes of light? We obviously didn't hear anything audible, but part of us wonders, are they communicating? But if they're broadcast, let's just say, in simple terms, they're broadcasting at that 98.5 frequency, and we're tuned to 101, we're gonna miss the communication. So maybe they are communicating, but we haven't yet figured out, where they're communicating at.
Absolutely. Yeah. Incredible stuff. And I completely concur and relate. I've had many spacecraft myself experiences. And that's the first thing I'm always aware of is there propulsion? And then how does it move? I try to capture it, of course, by picture and also by video so I can examine it later. I do ask other people. For me, thankfully, it's always been an extremely benevolent experience, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Yes.
I want to make sure, also, hearkening back to the story you told earlier, this incredible story of bringing out the astronomers and their equipment, their very powerful equipment that is not connected to the internet. I know you told this amazing story of your voices, just the two of you being broadcast, no matter where you went. But you had also started down the road to say, we turned off everything. And did you complete that after you turned everything off?
So the conclusion of that, we were not able to determine. We could not find the source of what was broadcasting our voices. And to be clear, it wasn't just Travis and I, it was the entire investigative team. So Eric, Caleb, Bryant, but it did not include any of the astronomers or any of the producers. So it was just focused
Not
on
important.
five of us.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just very intriguing. So we were not able to find an answer that satisfied. And again, the only way that we would know how to do that would be, directional microphones that were in close proximity. I mean, when they mic us up, we even have to have our mics. They spend a lot of time, those expensive mics. But, you'll see the directional microphones out on say like an NFL field where you see the big dish, the parabolic dish, and they're focusing in. But it's still picking up the people around them too, right? It's not a specific point. And this was so highly targeted. The only way we'd know how to do that would be to have a microphone right there in our faces. And so there was obviously that wasn't the case. Anything that had been picking us up would have had been doing it from a distance or couldn't be seen, right? If it was close to us, it couldn't be seen. And so we're still left scratching our heads over that. We have no idea. We've surmised it was harmonics, but again, when our broadcasting equipment is turned off, then you still are left with the question of what piece of equipment was broadcasting.
Yeah. I got really creeped out. There was one segment that featured a woman who used to live on another ranch that the team went out and investigated because she let them know that this piece of property, not Skinwalker Ranch, but another piece of property in a completely different location. Oh, I'm trying to remember, but it was really bad stuff that her dog died, and a few days later, the horse died, and a few days later, the husband died, and a few days later, and then
Oh
she's on
my
the phone with the son saying, "Get me out of here," and never went back. And the team went, and it was so dark. Whatever that energy was on that ranch, it's kind of unthinkable that something like that exists. I don't know if you've ever felt that on Skinwalker Ranch, that kind of darkness.
I have, yes, I mean, I haven't seen that series, but I can just tell you, that I have experienced terror on the ranch, a feeling of terror that was so, I've never felt anything like it before, and I've never felt like anything like it since. It is unique to the ranch itself, and it was so intense that it caused a physiological response, a severe shaking. It was, it's almost as if you're being electrocuted and your muscles involuntarily tense up. And I became almost incapacitated, and sitting there shaking. And those effects, that serious physical effect lasted for, more than 12 hours.
And didn't you
So.
also have other severe health issues working on the ranch, like a mysterious swelling on your head?
I did. And in March of 2017, I suffered a very severe head injury, an undiagnosed, unknown head injury, that almost cost me my life. It was severe enough that the second day in the hospital, the doctor called my wife in and told her to prepare the family and to, that it did not look good. And that if I did indeed pull through, the odds were extremely high that I would be in a vegetative state. And so, it was a very serious injury and took me a long time to recover from. And, is something that ended up, as I mentioned earlier, I'm very stubborn, hard-headed, and very analytical. I just so skeptical about so much of this stuff that, I would explain it away and explain it away. And it was really, the events surrounding my head injury, both before and after, that finally forced me, compelled me to accept that there are things happening in this world that we cannot always easily explain, and turned me upside down. Really, I woke up in a different world than what I went to sleep in, and my reality's never been the same since. So it's been It has been a life-altering experience, and it really, my head injury was kind of the pinnacle that forced me to quit being so hard-headed. That forced me to quit being so hard-headed and be more open-minded, and accept the fact that there is indeed a lot of strange things that happen, and we can't always we don't have the answers for everything.
We don't. Absolutely. The ranch is testimony to that. Over time, Thomas, have you developed coping mechanisms or protective measures that work well for you?
Yes, absolutely. I'm grateful. My wife is extremely gifted. She's an intuitive. She is a healer.
Oh,
And
wonderful.
this whole journey, I look back at this and it's kind of surreal. I even look back at how this even began, of me happening to be called out of church and happened to be in the parking lot at the exact time that Jim pulled in. I mean, if I'd been 5 minutes earlier, 5 minutes later, I would have missed him. And we are a small property. I don't have a front desk clerk that sits there all day. So chances are he would have pulled in, not seen anybody, and then gone down the road to the next hotel. And the timing that I just happened to be, everything just lined up so perfectly. And then my wife's journey of discovering her gifts and her abilities is kind of been parallel. She's had her own separate path, and she'll be at the Conscious Life Expo sharing that, which I'm really excited about. So she's kind of been my secret weapon out there that's helped in a lot of ways, not only protect me and keep me grounded, but also sometimes have to step in and do some corrective action, when I get messed up out there. I've been grateful for her. And then, in addition to that, at some point, the team and I were talking about this not too long ago. Some point you almost become desensitized to it. And as I was listening to you, at the beginning, say, "You're so courageous." I appreciate those kind words, but when you're sitting in my shoes, look at it, and I'm like, I'm not sure if it's courage or stupidity or just like, I don't know what to assign it to. But at some point, you become desensitized and almost numb to it, and it doesn't affect you the same way anymore. I traumatic things happen still, and I don't know. The reaction is different. It's not as it doesn't seem as serious. Maybe a little more even slow motion. You see trauma enough, I guess it desensitizes you and it doesn't affect you the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I would think would be traumatic are these unexplained deaths and mutilations of the livestock that have been happening at the ranch and surrounding areas. I know all around the world this occurs, and it's always been attributed to whatever race of extraterrestrials. And I want to say I heard something very interesting recently. There was somebody who, and I wish I could pull those pieces and names together, but it's what is germane is this. There is somebody very well known who channels an extraterrestrial. And I know many people like this who are world renowned. And somebody was saying, like, why would a race of extraterrestrials do this? Why in the world would you do something so awful to these animals? And the extraterrestrials got very confused, and they were asking about some of our practices of what we do in the ocean with the fish and how incredibly cruel we are to octopus and sharks, and in some countries what they do to dogs. And they were actually not understanding the question. And I thought that was phenomenal to understand what it must be like for a race outside of this culture, mores, ways of thinking, doing things that I wouldn't even deem acceptable that some people on this planet do, hunting, right? And these extraterrestrials are looking at us like, well, you do this, so dot dot dot. So tell me about that. I would imagine seeing that, experiencing that would be kind of an awful thing.
I'll point to last year. We were over at the drill site. We were in the process of drilling into the mesa, and so happens that we saw the cows were acting in an odd manner, and one of the calves, one of the babies, had separated itself from the herd, was directly behind where our science table was set up, maybe 100 feet away, 150 feet away, and is sitting there spinning circles, really, really tight circles. And it was spinning circles for probably a minute and a half to 2 minutes, really, really tight. And the rest of the herd, its mom is over there mooing, bellowing pretty, and there was nothing keeping her from running over to her calf, and her calf's sitting there bellowing and turning circles. And we're thinking, what is going on? I was up on top of the mesa with the drillers. I immediately ran down, came down, and went to check. The calf eventually quits turning circles and starts to wander over to the herd, but it almost is behaving as if it's dazed, or probably, I mean, it could have been dizzy for all the times it's sitting there spinning, right? But I ran over there to the calf, and of course it starts running away, and it starts running into trees, it starts running into all kinds of stuff. And I'm thinking, what the heck, is this calf blind? And when I finally get around it and I see its eyes, they look almost completely white. And so, long story short, we end up herding. I tried to get it pulled away, but the mom was being protective of the herd. So we ended up herding the entire herd over. And then we finally got this calf and its mom separated out of the herd over in the corral at Homestead. We called the rancher and we called a vet. And Dr. Haley came out from Salt Lake, and she took a look, and it was bleeding out of its eyes. And it was, she said that it had, the brain was swelling.
Oh my.
And so excuse me, miss, I'm on a podcast. I'm on a live podcast. sitting here in my living room.
But she can come on
anyways.
too.
Yeah, it's my wife coming home with her arms filled with groceries. So anyways, witnessing that, so it had swelling on the brain, which was causing pressure behind its eyes and caused it to go blind. And that's traumatic because we witnessed that. And also the idea that, whatever was happening, this calf was 150 feet from where, we're sitting there at the science table. What would that have done to us? And of course, having suffered a head injury myself, it really hits close to home. And so watching those things are traumatic. And of course, you feel bad for the animals. I'm a huge animal lover. I've got dogs and I love, horses and cows. You don't want to see any animals suffer. And so just to see animals suffer in general is not I do not like that. I know none of the team likes that. And so it does traumatize you, both for watching the animal suffer as well as, what it means.
You have no clue what kind of data they could be retrieving, why in that manner, and especially if they're that advanced, why would there be cruelty involved? That I don't understand. I know, for instance, with abductions, if you will, that the gray beings, extraterrestrials, have a tendency to be perceived sometimes as being cruel in some of their scientific experiments that they do, poking, prodding, putting in chips, implanting children, extracting children, all sorts of things. We also know many people have said that folks at this that have this experience have a soul contract. They have agreed before they came into this lifetime to go through this, and I'm not saying it would feel good or not terrifying to go through something like this, or sometimes multiple times. And so it makes you wonder, because the grays are devoid of emotion, which is part of why they're doing the experiments. They want to experiment with humans and reconnect in a hybridization program to bring back the emotions they literally genetically stripped themselves of, and now realize, whoops, wasn't such a great idea. So it makes me wonder if what's happening with the animals. But listen, if anybody is listening who is not from this planet, I will just implore you to understand to us that is deemed cruel, and to please stop, find other methods, loving, kind, benevolent methods to extract information. I do think they're listening sometimes. And so, Thomas, I have so many questions for you. This has been amazing, like really amazing. This could be a two-parter. And maybe we'll have you back next year. I want to ask you here about Conscious Life Expo. And do you have anything to add before I shift to that subject?
No, I'm super excited for the upcoming expo.
Yes.
This
What are you
is an
talking
area that
about?
holds a lot of interest to me personally, so.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that you'll be fascinated by, will be fascinated by you. And what are you presenting, you and your team, at Conscious Life Expo?
So, one of the things that makes Skinwalker Ranch unique is while we know there are many hotspots across the world that are famous or well known for certain types of anomalies or phenomena, one of the things I think makes Skinwalker Ranch truly special and unique is the conglomeration of so many different phenomena taking place there. And one of those, and one of the ones that holds the most interest to me, while I find UFOs fascinating and I find some of these poltergeists and some of this interesting. It's all interesting, but the part that really fascinates me is the consciousness part of it. Because what we witness at the ranch, just like I mentioned with the telescope experiment and hearing ourselves broadcast, there are we could spend days sharing and relating experiences we've had on the ranch that have been so specific and targeted as to who they're targeted to and what specifically is taking place, that there, I am of the firm belief that there is an intelligence behind the phenomena at Skinwalker Ranch. And I think that it directly is tied to the conscious level. And so my hopes at the expo is that with my team members is to be able to share a little bit of that and really kind of explore that a little bit more. We get into that area, and it's harder to showcase on a television show. With our series, really, we have to be able to explain it in a way that a fifth grader can understand. That's kind of our general rule on things, is that the things that are shown on television need to be explainable to a fifth grader. And sometimes when you get some of these topics, it's hard to adequately explain what's going on in maybe terms of fifth grader. And so some of that gets left out of the television show, not because it's not interesting, not because there's not incredible data with it, but simply because it's a subject for which the network just says, we really don't know how to accurately portray this, therefore we're not going to address this. And so there have been those things that have either been left out, or things that we've wanted to do that we've, the TV show only, we only out there filming for several months of the year. The rest of the time is left up to us to do whatever we feel we would like to do. Obviously, taking our cues from Brandon as well as our lead principal investigator, Eric Barr, who leads the science. So there's things that we've done. There's some incredible experiences that have happened. And so my hope at the expo is to be able to dive into this kind of other area that we're not always free to go into with the television series. And I feel like this will be the right demographic and the right convention, the right conference to be able to do that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh my God, it's going to be sold out for sure. So, folks, if you're interested, February 7th through the 10th, 2025, 23rd Annual Conscious Life Expo. The link is in the show notes. I'll also give it to you here. Go to debbiedashinger.com/CLE. It is debbiedashinger.com/CLE. And Thomas, this is Dare to Dream. So, what are you next, Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Obviously, I would love to find out what's in the mesa there at the ranch as we look forward to our investigation. We've obviously got something very, very interesting inside that mesa. So my hope is we can continue that and discover more what's with that. And then, on a personal level, I still have my companies that I'm running, and they are just going, and things are going great. So I have big goals with them of some big announcements that are coming up in the next month or two. So, we've got all kinds of good things going on.
I'm so happy for you. Thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for sharing so much. Amazing stuff.
Not a problem. And everybody can look forward to this upcoming year, season six. We just finished filming season six of The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. So look for that to be airing on the History Channel sometime in the spring.
Perfect. Yep, folks, you can go to the History Channel TV and you can sign up to see the episodes or watch them on your TV and also skinwalker-ranch.com. And I end today's show with this quote from Art Bell. I do believe in the paranormal. There are things our brains just can't understand. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream. You do want to subscribe because in the next weeks coming on the show will be Suzanne Giesman, Wendy Kennedy, Rebecca Dawson, Tricia McKinnon, Jason Quitt, and Barbara Lamb, all phenoms in their expertise field. So I would be very grateful if each of you would take a moment as a thank you to the show for all I give throughout every year, my 17 years on radio and podcast, would you please subscribe, like, comment? It means so much. Is it for me? Somewhat. But by me through this podcast, I get to reach so many people who are hungry for this information. Please help me get it in front of them by subscribing, liking and commenting. I thank you in advance. And remember, folks, don't just dare to dream. Dare to turn all your dreams into your reality. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.